organizations centered around institutions that are, you know, like we got now. I mean, this quasi-socialist slash capitalist slash fascist, whatever the fuck you want to call it. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, you brought up the point, too, that, you know, none of us signed up for this. You know, we're just born into it, and you're born into it with the land being the ultimate jurisdiction, and whoever is allegedly in control of the land controls you. And you have an unspoken, unwritten contract with the powers that be that control the land for your rights as a human, and it's just ridiculous. But, you know, I mean, we've talked about this too a little bit. Like, I mean, then you say, oh, well, if that's the case and no one governs you, then is there any higher power that you answer to? So, you know, and I think
yeah.
We know the Masons say yes. We know the Catholics and the Jews say yes, but I don't think it's necessarily any of those powers in the way that they describe them. Not that I have all the answers, but you know, to me, those are all just religions, and you know, those religions are very powerful. And you know, I was involved in religion at one time or another, but yeah, they're legitimate in their power and their control structure. And you know, the neat thing is that a lot of the people who actually have power within the land and that claim jurisdiction falls on you when you're born into the land and you stay in the land, it seems like that religion plays a key role in all of that, big time. You know, especially, you know, I'm from the Protestant side of the house, so, you know, they go back to Romans 13, that God empowers a state to rule over you, and that this higher power therefore empowers these other people, whether they're Masons or, oh, well, they couldn't be Islamic because no Protestant who watches Glenn Beck will put up with Islam. But they could be any other power. They could be Catholic. They could be Protestant. They could be crypto-Catholic. You know, they could be Jewish even, because I know the Protestants are big into, you know, Antichrist Jews. But anyway, yeah, so So where I was getting to was that these people think a higher power empowers them to control, but you know, that's something that I don't necessarily agree with or consent to. So
no, I don't either. I mean, anytime you have something, I mean, anytime that you have, well, I mean, like a situation we got now, we got total strangers making decisions for us that we never get to meet. In our, you know, and if you go before a judge on a traffic case or any kind of, it's going to be somebody that you've never met before in your life. I mean, does this make any sense? No, I mean, to me, it doesn't make any sense. And any version of this kind of system is never going to be fair. It's always going to be, it's always going to be losers coming out on the bottom end of it. And
yeah, even if we were back in the 40s in Hitler's regime, you know, would that be our 30s in Hitler's regime? Is that the best government in the world if you have to have a government? And you know, I can't speak to that. I can't speak to whether the Dark Ages were a great time to thrive and the Age of Reason and you know, all this stuff we learn about history, and they tell us how we've progressed. And I mean, I wouldn't know if that was the best time to live. Is living in Israel during the time of the prophets, would that be a great time to live as far as government goes, where you have a civil and a religious authority? I mean, I don't know. But
I wouldn't want to live in.
Well, yeah, I think that goes back. So if there is a higher power, what does that higher power actually give authority to men to do? And we clearly see that there – I mean, I believe in a higher power, but what they have done with their authority, I don't consent to or agree to as much as possible. Obviously, if I get pulled over, you know, I'm not trying to go to jail or cause a scene, but at the same time, you know, I'm not consenting to every single thing they do. I mean, I'm going to be a working hard case, you know. They're going to be calling backup, I'm sure, and which they've done a couple of times, but you know.
Well, what is it that makes us, though? I mean, we gotta look at this too, as like, you know, to kind of get a big picture view of like what's going on. Like, what makes us feel so obligated and beholden to any kind of organization such as the mass media, for instance? Like, why do we feel like we have to believe what they tell us and then ridicule people that don't believe it or suggest that it might be something in the media might be fake or contrived or something like that? I mean, it's clearly people that you've never met in your life. You turn on this box, and then there's this imagery on there, and then you got these people that you've never met in your life, and then they're telling you all this stuff, and it's like, why would anybody believe it necessarily?
I don't think that's not me, Chris, with the dog in the back.
Except Brian's dog. That's Brian's virtual dog.
Yeah, my
sim dog.
Sorry, let me see if I have a mute thing real quick.
What did he see? Did he see a raccoon outside or something?
No, I think my friend's at the door. And I told him to ring the buzzer. I told him to come in. Idiot.
That's cool. Sorry. Yeah, so, no, that's cool. It ain't no big deal. Yeah, so what form of government do you want, Brian?
None.
No,
I guess there has to be some, though, honestly. I don't know.
Why do you think that, though, Brian? Why do you think it has to be done?
I think there should be none. I mean, there has to be some sort of structure, maybe, you know?
Why? What purpose do they serve?
You don't think any law has to be upheld at all? There's some crazy people out there.
Are you afraid of these people?
Me personally, no.
Okay, so if you're not afraid of them, and I'm not afraid of them, and Chris isn't afraid of them, what exactly do we need government for?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you.
Well, like, I asked this question, too. Like, you can ask this to a cop. Say, so if you weren't getting paid to, like, protect old ladies and to take down the criminals, then you wouldn't do it? Like, if that was still going on in society and you weren't getting paid and you saw a crime taking place or somebody told you of a crime that happened, you wouldn't do anything about it unless you're getting paid? Right? Think about that one. Like, if you need to be paid to defend your family, to defend your community, to defend your tribe, you need to be paid to do that?
Yeah,
or would you do it? Would you do it voluntarily? There's volunteer fire departments. We have them all over the country. They don't get paid, but they still go out and fight fire. Like, they're just members of the community.
That generally
help
places
other
that
people.
Aren't too busy, though, right? I mean, they're pretty rural, usually.
I'm not saying that we should have the same system that we have now and then, like, the cops work for – the actually be cops working for – I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that you'd have to have something – you'd have to have something besides the money system, because you couldn't have a bunch of people having to work at other jobs and then no cops. And then it would take a total transformation of the way people think in order to change things. And I think those are good questions to ask. Like, because the assumption is like, oh, if we don't have government, then things are going to go to shit because the bad people will take over. Well, the bad people run shit right now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think, yeah. So people think if we don't have government, we don't have paramilitary local police protecting us, who's going to protect us? I mean, that's what everybody – that's a question everybody asks when I start bringing up all this anarchist-type theories. And most people say, who's going to protect us? And, you know, my answer to them is, well, if I attack you right now, are you going to let me attack you and kill you, or are you going to protect yourself? And
yeah.
They're going to protect themselves. And then, you know, that gets into, well, who's actually in control of you? You are the only one in control of you. Do you even own your own body? And you have to start there. Do you own your own body? And the answer is yes. Well, who should have control over you and what you do with your body? Well, I mean, logically speaking, no one. I mean, we should be the only ones who are in control of our own bodies. But yet, if you want to go smoke some dope or you want to even do meth, which is really bad for you, or, you know, whatever, there's laws to stop people from doing that, and there's people who love to go out and put you in jail for doing that, and there's plenty of people making money off that, and, you know, that's what's funny is that we're incarcerating people for that sort of thing, and these people are making money. Like you said, Chris, these are the corrupt bad people. They're the ones in control of the system.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, what are we really talking about here? We're talking about protecting us from who exactly? The crazies? I mean, who's the crazies? Is it really the meth addict who's trying to, you know, break into your house and steal something so he can get his next hit? Or is it the people who are in control? Which one is it? Which one's more threatening and menacing to us? Is it the meth addict, or is it the crazy mental case meth addict, or is it the powers that be? So, you know.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think it's probably better off without having some institutional established mechanism to, like, to completely take advantage of people. It doesn't seem like ideal at all.
Well, yeah, I mean, just look, most Americans, a third of our paycheck is being stolen for taxes without our consent. I mean, if you work for someone who is either, A, pulling taxes away or claiming you as a tax, claiming you as someone that they're paying, that money is being stolen from you. You're basically working part of your day for the government at large.
Then think about the other taxes you're forced to pay, like gasoline tax, which is huge, and you have to pay it on top of what's getting taken out of your check, you know?
Yeah. That's
not even part of the third.
Well, who's the bigger threat to us?
No, I hear you.
No, I mean,
definitely,
yeah.
Definitely the people in power right now.
Yeah, you got the government. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead. I was done.
I was just saying that the government, whatever you want to call it, people who, there ain't no such thing as the government, but the people who identify themselves as being part of the thing called government, basically they force themselves upon you, right? I mean, let's say you don't agree with paying property taxes. So let's say that, you know, you have a little small house or something. And you say, my dad gave me this house or whatever, and then, you know, they pay taxes on it, and that's, yeah, I think that's enough taxes already, so I'm just going to quit paying. Well, they'll come and kick you out by force. And then, you know, the money goes to, you know, bullshit brainwashing camps for kids and all kinds of other nonsense that you don't like, but you're forced to pay for it is what I'm saying. And then, you know, among other things, you know, that's where they get the money to do these psychological operations against us, you know. So, yeah, it's to keep us in control, to keep us pacified, to keep us afraid, and the institutions to keep us dumbed down. I mean, I think we could figure something out better than all this shit, myself. I don't think you necessarily have to have an absolute utopia. I think that, like, people get this concept of it's like this either-or thing. Either you're like, oh, you're wishing for utopia. That's why you want things this and that way. No, I just want things to make more sense than they do now. They make no sense right now. I bring
none
up...
None whatsoever.
No, none.
Not for us, at least.
Yeah, I think we got a better insight to how things really are, but for the average person, they're kind of just oblivious to it, and I think that's what perpetuates it.
Yeah, they don't even know something's going on, you know what I mean? It was, remember I said I went to breakfast with my friend and everything, that story. She also said, this is what she said, fucking Obama, goddamn blah, blah, blah. I'm like, Obama? I'm like, well, what do you think's going to happen to whoever they put in next? It's not just Obama, it's the whole system. You got to understand. She's like, well, everything was fine when George Bush was here. It's like, what?
Huh, really?
You're like the only person I ever could say that, actually.
Wow. That's amazing.
You ever heard somebody say that? I've heard it the other way around more than anything.
Oh, I've seen it, like, implied, yeah, like, yeah, I've had, like, you know, friends say stuff about, like, I mean, they hate, this one friend of mine, he, like, hates George Bush, man, like, George Bush is...
Oh, one of my friends hates him so much that if you call him that fucking around, he'll want to fight you, and I used to do it to him at baseball, because he was on my baseball team, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I had people calling him George Bush, and he get beat red. Don't ever call me George Bush. He go nuts. Hardcore Democrat. He doesn't even know what he believes in. You know what I mean?
Poor guy. I think the reason it's like that is because the media that's out there, they basically help you like secure part of your identity in these people and what these people stand for, which we know they don't really stand for anything. But the media puts out like,
George Bush
is wishy-washy on this, but, man, he is. When it comes to abortion, man, George Bush, man, he really cares. He loves all those little unborn babies. Oh, you know. And
this
so you get.
False leader thing.
Yeah, you start identifying with this guy like he's like a normal guy. Like, oh, man, he's so cool. I'd like to have him over and talk about unborn babies and how we want to save all the unborn babies, you know.
That's why they got him out there throwing first pitches at baseball games and stuff. It makes you look like the normal guy. He plays baseball. You know what I mean? Like they do.
Like psychological things
you don't think of.
Yeah, like you identify with him, and therefore that helps you feel normal, and it makes him look normal, and you know, like you have an identity connection with this person, and so people take it personally, whether it's against Obama or against Bush or pro Obama or pro Bush. You know, it's like it's part of your identity, so people get very personal. And I was like that in 2004. I mean, I thought if George Bush didn't win, the terrorists were going to take over, you know. We'd all be cowing down to an imam, you know, and the 2008 election. And, oh, man, if George Bush doesn't win.
I never believed much in the election, but I did believe in the terrorists.
Oh, man, I tell you what. Oh, they – man, that operation was so great. I mean, yeah. I remember just walking around, and I live outside of Dallas now, but when I lived in Dallas, I remember walking around like thinking, man, I could be blown up in any second, man. Look at all these Arabs around me. Holy cow. I mean, that's how ridiculous your mindset gets to when you get just spoon-fed all this indoctrination from media, from Glenn Beck, Michael Savage, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, I used to love O'Reilly. I used to cheer him on. I thought he was great. He could make
a
douchebag going. And we used to sit up in this apartment we had, me and my friends. So we both, like, after 9/11, we were watching the news all the time. You know what I mean? Then we're watching O'Reilly. We're cheering him on, you know? And then it was this Arab guy across the street. He had this little shop. He hardly had anything in there. It was this little crazy, stupid little store, you know? But we thought it was like a front for a terrorist organization. So we used to sit there and spy on this guy with binoculars from across the street because we thought he was a terrorist. And we're over there invading this guy's privacy with binoculars.
Well, that's one thing that I really enjoyed with Lynn and Honor being interviewed by John Friend was that Lynn and Honor was talking about reptilians and how he actually believed David Icke's reptilian story, and that he would actually look at poles and think that reptilians were scratching their backs with these big poles that were in his neighborhood.
Whoa.
So, I mean, that's how crazy you get to thinking, though. Like you said, Brian, you're looking at your neighbor across the street thinking he could be a terrorist, and you're going to go, like, spoil a big terrorist plot to blow up America, you know?
Yeah, I could see how people's, like, imaginations can run wild with
stuff. Oh, it was running wild, like Hulkamania. It was crazy.
Yeah, and then you were just doing your duty as an American, which is the hype and everything. You were doing the right thing.
I wasn't going to go over there and on a grappling hook, and I would have called somebody if I really thought something was going on, but we never saw none. But it just looked like, because they had no business, like, we thought he was a front for a fucking terrorist ring.
Yeah, like, you see people that are Muslim, you know, they wear the what are those things the women wear? Those face masks, the burqas.
Yeah.
I remember when I lived in San Diego, it was like a community of like I think they were Indian, but they were Muslim Indian, I think, and they would come in the I would be in a store and I would see like I started seeing them a lot, but I could see what they're so distinct in their culture and everything that it could make people uptight. And it's kind of like, they're like a perfect patsy or a boogeyman to put out there because people are suspicious of them anyway.
Already. Yeah.
Yeah, the women are wearing, like, who goes around in public concealing their face and stuff? That's so out of context with the average,
We don't understand that.
Yeah, I can't really, don't really get
that,
it.
Nobody would do that unless it was like below zero.
Well, I just wonder, too, the way things are. I wonder if that, when they invented the Muslim religions and all that, did they have that in mind for some time, ages down the road, that there would be this massive world conflict against the...
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's pre-planned, but that's so far back. I mean, I don't know about that.
What?
But it just seems so... You know what I mean? I'm just saying that the way they, their behavior, the way they look, the where they conceal in the face. I know that has some specific kind of religious reasons for doing that, but nonetheless, they do that, and that's part of their culture. I mean, you have this real.
If it was a setup, it could have been written into the religion.
That's what I'm wondering about. If that's even because it just seems like the way this stuff is unfolding, it just seems like. Way too convenient, almost. It's like, what if their religion would have happened to turn out to where that their beliefs didn't make them that much radically different from the average Westerner, at least on a visible, surface level, that it wouldn't work. Like if you couldn't like distinguish them from like, let's say a Latino, in the way that they dress and act. But, you know, the way they do now, they're so distinctive that people can have something to latch on to. You see what I mean? So, like, if that wasn't the case, then they couldn't pull off this whole clashes of civilizations bullshit, this stuff that's going on now that's being played up to the hilt. So, it just makes me wonder about this stuff, you know. You think about... Because we know about like the Disney films and stuff were demonizing the Arabs and stuff for years and years before 9/11, leading up to 9/11. You had all this propaganda against Muslims, and then if you think about it and say, okay, when was that prominent? Well, it would have been right around the time that. Young men that were war eligible on 9/11, that Disney crap would have been coming out about around the time when they were like 6 years old, 8 years old. They were young, impressionable minds then. And then you realize, you step back and you like, wow, this is insane. We live in this, well, like Alan Watt will say, it's a long-term business plan. It's like this stuff is thought out years and years ahead before we even heard of this ominous threat of Muslim terrorism. It was already in the works.
Yeah, yeah. The whole thing, they made it up. There's not people that want to blow themselves up to kill you. I really have not doubt there's too many of those in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's planned out, but I don't know if it's like multi-generational plans. It's probably more once you establish control. You can pretty much do what you want within a...
Yeah, the control gets passed down, so they keep the plan going.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like a 30-year cycle or something that you have, probably 20 or 30 years you have to plan within that generation for what you're going to do and accomplish and then move on.
How long they plan the power's destruction, you know? Probably like 30 years, so...
Centralized control, though, is the key. So, you know, just like our imaginations are taking off on 9/11, that's that whole... traumatic mind control type thing where you're actually thinking, we would have never thought anything about an Arab being on the airplane with us until after 9/11, you know? I wouldn't have. I'd have been like, oh, look at that guy. I think he worships Allah. Look, kids, he believes in Allah. And, you know, I might explain it to my kids. Instead, I'm like, oh, my gosh, kids, we're going to die. Pray right now, you know? I didn't do that, but I could see how I could potentially do that.
Like if you would have took a plane trip right after 9/11, and you got on the plane and you got your family and y'all are kind of settling in, and then like a couple of seats up from you, like you see these like two dudes in turbans, Like, oh, as long as you're getting it. Oh, yeah, he'd be like,
talk
real uptight, man.
Too, like, look at these guys. What are we going to do?
Yeah, get ready to do the let's roll.
Passage of 57, Leslie Smith.
Just, yeah, you know, how many scenarios like that have played out over the years since 9/11? I mean, not actually people taking action, but I mean the thoughts going through people's heads like
it's
that.
It's the TV. How about the show 24? And I love the show, you know, but I can see through the BS. Now, that show is total terrorism propaganda, and it came out right after 9/11. The first episode launched in November 2001. And there's a video game that I used to play all the time called Splinter Cell, and it's like the same storyline basically as that show, and it came out the same time, 2000, 2001, and it's about the same thing, an agent for the government trying to stop terrorism. He has all these gadgets and all this shit, but the basic thing of that show is it glorifies these guys having no rules in the name of national security. They do whatever the hell they want,
yeah.
And it hypes up terrorism, you know? They do odd things, like sometimes they'll point the finger at people in our own government, stuff like that. So they'll make it interesting to watch. But the real thing is they give you got Jack Bauer out there basically just torturing whoever he wants, and he just gets away with it, and it's accepted, and people share him on. Now, what that really will subconsciously program some people where if you hear that somebody gets tortured, and, you know, you're somebody that watches that show all the time, this terrorist guy got tortured, but they're going to allow it to stand in court or something, you would totally go for that because, hey, he's a terrorist. They had to do it.
Yeah, and then people will say that, yeah, this is all being done, and this was planned out by, you know, Jews or whatever, Hollywood, and then it's to undermine our glorious republic and our glorious constitution, to take away our glorious constitutional rights. And I don't look at it that way at all because, you know, the Constitution, you know, it's Constitution. It's really what it's all it's doing, and this is how the Constitution has always been. This is always it's always just you know, because everybody's got their own interpretation of the Constitution. This is just revamping and reframing and perspectivized. I don't know what the word I'm trying to get at is, but no, it's just taking the Constitution and then, like, oh, we're the greatest country on earth with the greatest laws and the greatest justice system on the planet, and just, you know, changing the definition of what that really means. And that, you know, it's like it used to mean one thing, like you get some particular expectation in court, which is, you know, jury trial and this and that and the other thing, which, you know, may or may not be a good thing for you, but the fact remains that you've always been, you always go before total strangers. The judge is a total stranger. Your defense attorney is a total stranger. The prosecuting attorney is a total stranger. The jury is total strangers. But, you know, it's the greatest system on the earth, and it always deals out justice. And then, but now we got a revision of that where, it, you know, they've just gradually just revamped it over the years. And then, like I was ranting and raving about, like when I got that ticket and I go to federal court over my tag on my truck, and I say, and it says on the back of the ticket that you will not get a jury trial. And, like I was asking about that, it's like, yeah, don't you, because it says the penalties can be up to $5,000 and 6 months in jail. That's a pretty substantial penalty for something that I don't even allowed to have a jury trial. Like, what happened to the Constitution and all that, the Bill of Rights and all that? Well, this is this, and this is that, and this is administrative, and this is federal, and this is that. And it's like, are they right or are they wrong? Well, somebody can come back and say, well, Chris, man, that's, You need to tell them that's unconstitutional, and you need to stand up for your constitutional rights. And my answer back would be, well, don't they know that's unconstitutional? It's obviously on its face it's unconstitutional. It says on the back you don't get a jury trial. The Constitution, I guess, says that you're supposed to be, I think, or the Bill of Rights or whatever, that you're entitled to a jury of your peers and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that whole definition of what the Constitution means has always has been and always will be in flux. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get certain rights. It doesn't necessarily mean this or that or the other thing. It's always it's always subject to change. And then we're just going through a phase where this is just being changed again, where we just have different expectations of what we should expect. And that's always the way it's been. O'Brien's going to take his dog out to craft or whatever. Yeah, that's cool, man.
I sent you the message so I didn't have to tell you what he is.
No, that's how unprofessional I am. I'll just blurt it out on there. So we don't. Yeah, I don't feel like I need to spare anybody. Life, man. All right, man.
Well, I think that's why, though, the court system is successful, because people have an idea that we need protection. And the court system and the so-called justice system is the only thing that can do that and mete out justice to protect us from, you know, the minorities in some people's mind, protect us from the drug addict in other people's mind, protect us from our abusive neighbor or abusive husband or abusive wife. You know, they think all these things need to be in place because we need these protections, because we are incapable. We are basically, it's like a trained helplessness. I know we've talked about this a long time ago, but it's like they're training us to be totally dependent on authority and to appeal to authority for anything, including self-protection. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, even if somebody broke into my house with a knife and a shirt that said, I'm going to murder your family, if I shoot them, I still get taken down to the station. I get fingerprinted. You know, I kill this person who obviously had ill intent. I still got to go down the station. I got to get fingerprinted. They're going to confiscate my gun for 2 years as evidence in the shooting. You know, because I was talking to a guy who actually, I was in a gun store a couple of weeks ago, and I talked to a guy who actually shot someone. And I was talking about buying this gun, and he said, hey, you better buy it, because if you ever have to use it, you'll never see it again. I said, what? He said, yeah, you know, the police confiscated my gun. I shot a man at my house, on my property, and I've never seen my gun again. It's been over 2 years now, and he still doesn't have his gun back.
Yeah, so, they just took his gun. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just using that as a very small microcosm example. But the point is that people think the system needs to be in place to protect us and to make sure that when this man shot this other man while he was on his property, he didn't actually murder him, you know. Like, they think, I don't know, it's like, why do we have to go through all this? Why do we entrust these powers to reign over us and protect us? I don't know, man. It's so the ideology, because what's weird, Chris, is I just came out of that ideology not even, I guess, what, seven years ago. So it is bizarre, like, the way I think today and how I used to think. I mean, and I have to go back to the magic box, the TV and the radio, because I would listen to talk radio on my way home every day. And what's weird, too, is I would come home, like, with highly toxic. So I would listen to these conservatives, and, you know, Dallas-Fort Worth, it's pretty conservative. And, I mean, there are some liberal stations, but back in those days, it was more so conservative. There's some liberal stuff on now that I just run through the dial occasionally on my way to work, but which I hardly ever listen to that. I listen to these talks more than anything. But my point is, I'm way off subject here. The point is that, you know, I would come home toxic because I'm listening to, you know what the Democrats did today? You know what you know what Al Gore said today? You know what Hillary Clinton said today? Did you hear what Bill Clinton did at his fundraiser? You know, like all these, like, these things that got me so passionate. But I'm basically stealing the energy that was coming through the radio, and I'm bringing all that home with me, and it was just toxic, man. It was horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't, like, yelling at my wife or anything, but I'm, like, talking about stuff that is so irrelevant in front of my children, and that's time that was stolen from me, where I'm not talking about, you know, I'm not discipling them, I'm not teaching them things that are good and wholesome and, you know, showing my son how to turn a wrench. I'm talking about stupid stuff, like, did you hear what the Democrats did today? And he don't even know what I'm talking about, you know. But he's got to sit there and listen to it because we're all at the table and Dad's talking. So,
yeah.
Which I'm not against that. I am for men sitting at the table and talking with their children. But it's just a shame I was stuck in that paradigm, coming home and bringing that toxicity into my home. Like, that is, like, it's real. Like, it has a real impact on us, you know. We're talking about
Yeah, it does. Then you pass it down to your children, and then they learn that. That's learned behavior, and then they get that those concepts and ideas like, my dad, my mom believed in it, so it must be
right.
Legit. You know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And then, like, nobody ever – that's the thing, too, is, like, nobody ever questions it. Remind me of this quote I wanted to read. It's about 9 o'clock, by the way. It's September 15, 2014. I'll say that. But, yeah, the quote, it's a pretty good one. And I didn't read a quote, so I was just going to find it and read it here. I noticed Rochelle's on the call too. I haven't heard her say anything. Are you still there, Rochelle, or are you just listening? Or
I guess I'm here.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
You got something you wanted to like? Oh, what's that again? I'm sorry.
I said I don't have anything. Anything. It's been fun listening to you guys.
You're just listening again. Yeah. I know. Okay. Yeah, I was gonna try to find this quote.
Yeah, I listened to myself back on your calls, and I'm like, oh shit, like I should shut up or I'm rude. So I'm just listening.
No, I mean, I didn't think you were disrupting the call or anything, or trolling or anything. Yeah, if you want to, just chime in whenever you want when you're ready. I'll just. Damon, you could talk, I guess, if Rochelle's not. While I find this quote. It was really, really good one. That's why I'm messing with it.
I could say something real quick about Reynolds, which is seems to be my main theme. I was just looking into some of the words they're using when they're describing the Reynolds school shooting or whatever out here in Oregon. The first thing they said was that they said that it was a tactical event. That's what they described the shooting as. That they were told that this was a tactical event and that they didn't know what that meant at the moment. And so, I did some research on what a tactical event was, and you should look that up. You should look up what a tactical event is. It's basically a, what is it called? It's a private battle, so it's like a role-playing battle game, basically. So I thought that was interesting.
So you're saying the school shooting was a tactical event where there's actually opposition and there's a there's like good guys and the bad guys type tactical event. That's what you're saying, where they have an adversary, basically.
I guess you know, there'd be a good guy bad guy thing, but I guess the way it was described was as a private battle or a live action role playing game, basically. LARP, I guess is what they call it. The acronym. So, LARP is the acronym, a live action role playing. So yeah, that's pretty much what they described that event as. That's what they said it was, like, from the get go. So it seems like, again, it seems like one of those legality things where they're trying to stay within their own bounds, and in some form, in one way or another, they're gonna let you know that this is kind of a game that they're playing in some way.
Live action role playing. I've never actually heard that term before. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So this was like in the documents about the drill, or this is
this was
the way it was described in like the white papers to the people who participated.
I'm sorry, I guess I didn't catch all that.
I was just saying, so this was in the white papers for the people who are participating. Like this was in the this is some type of something that was broadcast, or this was something on paper.
Yeah, no, this was broadcast. Yeah, I'm going to make a little video about that. This is what the Brent Weisberg, who's our Portland, who's like one of the newscasters out here. Yeah, this is what he said over his Coin News, over the news. Yeah, they said it was a tactical event. They described this as a tactical event, and we don't exactly know what that means yet, and that's pretty much where they took it. So I was like, wow. And I was like, what the hell is a tactical event? So Googled it, and yeah, it's really interesting.
All right, I'm back.
Are you on?
Yeah, I can drop somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a lot going on here. I'm trying to keep it all together.
You got a couple calls?
Oh. Huh? Yeah. And then I just noticed my chat window just froze. I think John was trying to call in too. Let's see, I got to reboot.
What's John? John Friend? John B?
John Adams.
John Adams.
Oh, nice.
Former president of the United States?
Uh huh. Yeah. Makes pretty good beer, too.
He's still alive? Oh, he's making beer and stuff. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. Well, he had to stay alive to run his beer company.
Oh, yeah.
So
right.
He had to clone him or unfreeze his head or something. Yeah.
Yeah, what's funny, you mentioned the word clone, just something funny. A friend of mine who's like in the Republican paradigm sent me a video saying that Michelle Obama and Barack Obama were clones from the past.
Oh, I see.
I think I've seen that from Freeman before, but I think that's the guy who propagated that video originally. But
Facebook, Donald Marshall, he always says this clone stuff, that he's been taken hostage by aliens, by trying to clone him and microchip him, and it's crazy.
I just thought that was funny because. Yeah, I thought it was funny because we just got through talking about how being stuck in that paradigm, like you look at everything from Republican lenses, but he's looking at that like it could potentially be real, but yet, you know, 9/11 is just like the government said, and there's nothing that's fake. Everything is real because it's reported to the media. It's just
that's craziness.
Hilarious. But yet he'll consider a cloning video that Obama and Michelle Obama. That's not awesome. That's not off limits.
Can't wrap around making a fake clone or something.
Yeah, very bizarre.
What the look of your God? I don't think you're.
Looks like John's on the call. Hey, John.
Hey.
Okay, you're on now.
Oh,
we got
a free
house.
I had to restart my chat window deal.
Oh, yeah. Hey, John, thanks for the correction, by the way. You were right about – I thought that the Murray Rothbard book was written like in the early 1900s. So, but it wasn't, of course. So.
Oh.
Well, that's why I thought the guy was like this like super – I mean, the guy's intelligent anyway, but I was like, man, this guy is like super – he basically is telling the future. This is insane. Why has no one ever told me about this book? Anyway,
that's funny. I wasn't trying to correct you. I just wanted to – put it out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd rather be corrected than keep talking a fool's game. So, you know.
Well, it's good to finally talk to you after hearing you so many times.
Oh, hey, thanks. It's good to talk to you, too. I've listened to a lot of you guys' calls, so it's been good. I was telling Chris, I don't know if you heard earlier, but I was telling Chris it'd be great if you could make a list of, like, your top 20 books and give that out to Chris. He could put it on his Hoaxbuster site. Not that I need any more books, but you bring them out of the woodwork, man. Some of those I've never heard of, and I've got a lot of so-called New World Order books, and some of them are Christian-based, some of them are secular-based, and, you know, a lot of them have really good – I buy those books because they have really good bibliography, and that's usually where I go to see what the title of other books that they've read that they actually put in their book. So,
well, the one thing Alan Watt was right about he said something once that really made me think about I've got so many different books. You know, I got a lot of John Bircher books. I've got, you know, like you said, New World Order conspiracy books. I've got books written, you know, by the elite themselves. And then you just got like mainline history books or whatever. No matter where they're coming from, whether it's the communists are doing it, whether it's the Jews are doing it, whether it's the Jesuits are doing it, no matter who's doing it, you can always read a book and you could think to yourself, man, he's right. It really is this group. So that proves that it's all of them doing it together.
So you're saying because they can point to one group, it's all the groups?
Yeah, what I'm saying is that you could read a book and you could come away from that book and think, you know, think to yourself, all of this information in this book is pretty darn, you know, accurate, and it points to this one group as being, you know, the head of the pyramid, right? And obviously that's not true. There's not just one group, but it is true that the one group is doing all of those things, so it must be all of them together.
So you're saying that there's evidence to support all groups being involved in it all, because you can make a case for every single group individually.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, today I stopped by Barnes and Nobles, and I think that's funny because people tend to stay like in their own boxes, kind of. I mean, kind of like what we're trying to do, but people also, like, if you listen to something, or you're watching something, or like even me, like browsing around Barnes and Nobles and looking at a lot of different topics or whatever you say, people think that because you're listening to something or you're watching something that you agree with everything that they're saying, you know? And like,
yes.
In fact, it's like, that's actually what you have to do, is you have to look at things from every perspective and see it from every angle just to get a better understanding of it. Use your own logic. Like, if you stay within your own box, you're not getting the full picture, you know? So, again, people who are, sorry about that. My dog's running around. So again, people that are reading these books and stuff like that, that's probably all they're reading is, you know what I mean? That one little topic there, and they're like, oh yeah, it's all these people or it's all that people. But if they were to go outside of their comfort zone and read something that they didn't necessarily agree with, they would, you know what I mean, gain a new perspective and see a new angle on things. So
yeah, you could read a book and it'll say it's all the Zionist Jews doing everything and they're controlling everything and Bill Clinton's a secret Jew. And then you could read another book that says it's all the Jesuits doing everything and Bill Clinton is a secret Jesuit. Right. So what is, you know, and then they'll provide proof, you know, to a certain extent about that type of stuff. And you're like going, well, what is he, a secret Jew or a secret Jesuit?
Well, he's both.
He's actually really Winthrop Rockefeller's son. That's what he is.
He is what?
He's actually Winthrop Rockefeller's illegitimate son.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what you get. That's what you get when you're Winthrop Rockefeller's illegitimate son. You get to come from out of nowhere and become the governor of Arkansas.
Well, so you were talking about you know, one group being on the top. I mean, all these groups, it appears as if they worship different gods, but they don't actually worship a god in essence of like a one true god. Like the book of Psalms chapter 83 talks about like all the nations worship God and all these gods help them plot how to take down and how to control regions of the earth. And it's kind of an insight into, you know, all these nations that do what they do and all these groups of people that do what they do, they're getting insight from a higher authority that's otherworldly. So I know that may sound really nutty to people on this call, but, you know, it's kind of an interesting part of Psalms where I think it's Asaph or David, one of the two, are writing that about how these people want to take down people in the earth and control and rule over them. Like, that's been going on for a long time. I mean, I don't know when the book of Psalms was written, but it's been going on for quite some time. But my point is that, yeah, at the top, it could be, you know, could it be otherworldly? I mean, I believe it possibly is when you read, like, things like the book of Enoch and you read things like the book of Jubilees and the Bible. It's clear that all these people are worshiping some type of entity in the earth, whether it be through an occult ritual like masonry or a false religion, what have you.
Yes. A lot of the Psalms are taken from the Book of the Dead and from Egypt. They were actually Psalms to the Pharaohs, a lot of them.
They were songs to Pharaoh himself, or a Pharaoh of Egypt, you mean?
To pharaohs and to the gods. In Egypt, you know, you hear a lot of different names for the gods: Horus, Ra, Amun, Aten, all those different gods. Those are all local gods for different regions. And the different names of, they were all sun. It was all sun worship. And a lot of those ideas that the Hebrews took for when they applied it to their religion later on, if there in fact was a Hebrew people, as we tend to think of it, there probably was some sort of group. I don't know if they were actually like what's described in the Bible. But
Think more of them as a group, because like even Moses and the people who, like some of the founding patriarchs, not to get off topic, but the founding patriarchs married into like Ethiopian wives and Midianite wives, and so they're not completely Hebrew per se. So they're being classified as Hebrew because they married into a male who was part Hebrew. From the lineage of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So, according to the Bible.
That could be.
But anyway, I didn't mean to stop you down, so go ahead.
Oh, no. I mean, that's okay. Well, we can go that route, too, because I tend to think that there probably wasn't a particular group of people who were part of a particular lineage. It was most likely that slaves, you see, no matter what time period you've been in, whether it was during the Civil War or whether it was during ancient Egypt, I don't come away with that there was any particular group of color people that were just said, okay, all of these people are going to be slaves. No, you had all people of all colors, no matter what they were always slaves. And so in order to be able to get slaves to rebel, you have to give them kind of a background story be able to get them to do what you want if you want to change the culture of that time period. And so you give them kind of a background story of a lineage, and they could all be, you know, of mixed races and all sorts of things. And then that's why today you come away with people who are from Ethiopia or you know, from Papua New Guinea, and they all have this ancient kind of lineage linking back to the Hebrew stories, because those types of people were all probably once slaves in either Egypt or Babylon. Did I get cut off?
No, you're there. I was just so that being said, you're saying that because they were slaves that what your point is that they should be controlled? Or there are controlled? I don't think I heard your point very well.
No, my point was that the people who you would call Hebrews in the Old Testament were probably a mixture of different races.
Oh yeah, absolutely, no doubt.
And they were slaves not because they were Hebrews, but because people were slaves for all sorts of different reasons. In different times, and it wasn't just like directed at one particular group. It's kind of like the myth of black slavery during the Civil War, right? It's not that there wasn't black slavery like some people like to see. Obviously there was, but there was other types of slaves as well. There was white slavery, there was Irish slavery. Everybody was a slave.
Yeah, John, what reason do you think it is that they speak of black slavery so much, so highly, as to that basically people don't even think about there being other races of slaves, when in fact, you know, white slavery, or I guess that's a different term, but Caucasian slaves allegedly were treated worse than black slaves because they weren't even bought, and, you know, they weren't they had no monetary value or whatnot during that time. But why do you think that it is that they don't speak of Caucasian slavery and other types of slavery and only focus on black slavery? I've got my theory, but I'd like to hear what you think.
Chris articulated it very well on one of the calls, like maybe it was the last call or the call before. He was talking about it, and it's the same thing that I was kind of touching on with the Hebrew stories in the Bible. You have to give people their history, their lineage. You make it up. And so, if you want somebody to rise up against something, then you have to give them a background of some sort of oppression. And not that that wasn't true. It's just that you have to make it out to be only that group. You see?
Yeah, well, I know the Bible does talk about white slavery if you call Edom white, because they said that Edomites were red and hairy all over, like they blushed in their skin. And so it appears that the Edomites, when David went and conquered them, King David, which was probably black because Solomon said he was black like, I think he said he's black like as night, like he was burned by the sun. That's what it says. But it says that he went into Edom and he made them pay tribute and he killed one out of every three men. So he put them, when they say pay tribute, it basically means he enslaved them and made them pay taxes to him. So, I mean, I know in the Bible it talks about that. And it talks about how the Greeks came in the book of First Maccabees and how they took the Torah from the Hebrew people, if that, we'll call them that for the sake of not having another name, but because we know they were mixed people. But this Hebrew culture, that's probably a better way to describe it. The Greeks came in and they took the Torah and they put white images to the Torah to make Moses white and make all everyone look white, so that when the next generation came up, they looked at the Greeks as the patriarchs of their religion. So it's that's documented in the book of 1 Maccabees 3:47 and 48, and it's really a neat. I've never forgotten that story because it's really, it's really how you could turn a culture upside down completely without destroying it. Is you make these other people like Jesus. When most of us see a picture of Jesus, he's projected as a white, kind of feminine male figure with long hair and a kind of a scruffy beard, but it always reminds me what the Greeks did, though, to the Torah and put their images, like the images of Zeus, like what we see today in the Catholic Church, like your images of Zeus and Jupiter and Diana, who's now Virgin Mary. And it's just, it's very interesting, though, how they would do that. And I kind of look at the TV like as the same type of weapon. You know, that where we take a culture and it's easily corrupted through visualizations through the television. And the same way we do that with TV today, not we, but they do that with the TV and we consume it. They used to do that with books, and the Greeks, it's documented that the Greeks did it and were successful at it. So, so to your point, I don't know how that fits the point, but I just started talking, so.
Keep talking. I got to mute myself for a second.
But the bottom line is it's all deception, and it's a deception made to control people. So when you talk about people being slaves, I wouldn't even call them slaves. I would just I'd refer to it as a control grid, basically, like Chris's buddy Alex Jones talks about all the time, the prison planet. Where basically you have
Chris's
a certain
buddy.
Yeah, Chris's buddy. Yeah. Where you have a grid basically that's capable of using and taking people's imagination and using it and their work efforts and taking those efforts and their imagination and the things that they create and using it to benefit you. Leverage, I guess, is the bottom line, because like we were talking about earlier, there was a time we actually would look at Arabs and think they're gonna kill us. And we would be on alert, you know. So, because we fell into the 9/11 paradigm that Arabs are trying to kill us, and they hate your freedom, and they hate you, and, you know, you're going to die.
Yep, I was spying on them with binoculars. That's terrible.
That's interesting, actually, about the Hebrew stuff. I should read that. I should read the Bible. what I'm saying. But I guess if people saw me walking around with the Bible and stuff, they'd think that, that I believe in all that. But I think that it has a lot to, I think the Bible has a lot to say in many allegorical ways. And so it's probably one good read to go into deep analyzation on. But my theory basically on the whole slavery thing is I think that it's kind of a long term, as far as the black slavery, then not promoting, I guess it's probably not the right word, but, you know, we get taught about black slavery in history class, and, you know, we have a Black History Month and stuff like that, you know, and so people, when people think about slaves, I think that they probably think about black people, you know. And when black people think about slaves, I think they probably think about black people, not to mention all the slave movies they've had out recently and all the stuff and everything. And I'm black. I don't know. So, you know, I've got some feelings on that. I feel like it's just kind of a psychological warfare game. That's not where, I don't think that the black community is meant to be the destroyed in the end. I think it's probably the synthesis of what came out of the fallout of the black community and whatnot. And then the way black people view themselves and see themselves psychologically is it's meant to be a, what would you call it? We're meant to feel inferior or seem inferior to, I guess, especially Caucasian races or whatever. I think that, you know, as if, and so basically black people walk around feeling like they're inferior to the white man or whatever, and then maybe some of the white guys walk around feeling like they're superior to the black man or any other race for that matter, you know? And that's kind of a common meme played out, you know, like that's kind of the conclusion that you come upon, that you're supposed to come to when you're learning about black history or whatever, I guess. I mean, I could be wrong about that, but that's the conclusion that I've came upon, that, oh, so they're trying to say that black people are inferior or whatnot, you know, and
well, I think that's all through the media when you hear, like, only people who commit crime are black, the only people who populate prisons are black, the only reason single black women have children is for a welfare check, you know, it just goes on and on and on.
And so what's interesting to hear, when you hear about white slavery and how white slaves were treated worse than black slaves, and then you start to think, like, okay, so, you know, maybe I'm not so inferior, you know, like we're kind of all the same. And then I was kind of thinking about, well, what happened to black people, you know, their speech and their way of living and everything. It's a 180-degree flip, you know, from just 30, 40 years ago. You know, black people used to own bookstores, you know what I mean, whole communities of intellectuals and whatnot. And then somewhere along the lines came the rap game and the rap talk and, you know what I mean?
I think
I feel like that's actually probably, because it's like the gangster culture coming to a town near you, I feel like that's probably one of the synthesis that they're trying to come to, because what the gangster culture did to the black community is completely destroy it and completely separate family members. It destroyed that family unit, you know? And so I think that when black people were made to feel inferior, and then they broke up the family and they took the male out of the home, then, you know, black women became very strong, and black men, you know what I mean, tried to portray the image of masculinity, basically, you know, they tried to, they became, I guess, I don't like to use the word gangster, but I mean, you know, what people see as gangsters now, I think that people mistakenly see that as some kind of superior, maybe not lifestyle, but just an attitude in general. So when I'm driving down the street and I'm not listening to music, or if I'm listening to rock music or something like that, you know, a little white kid will pull up next to me, bump his little Wayne and stuff with the, you know what I mean? Like his pants sagging and his hat backwards. It's almost like, because they say that imitation is the highest form of flattery, right? And so
right.
it seems like they've turned the black male into a hard ass motherfucker. Sorry to use that, you know what I'm saying? Allegedly, you know what I mean? His persona is supposed to portray that.
Well, I think so that. Yeah, I think that's a class system, though, at work, where you have a previous slave class that was slaves, and then they tried to bring them into normalize them within society. It took 300 years. I mean, it was just 60 years ago they said a black man only counted 2/3 of the vote, right? So when they normalized them, it created this super intense, like super low class, like this impoverished class. And I don't think it's necessarily, obviously it is, there's a lot of memes put out against black people because of the fact that they were slaves for 300 or 400 years in this country. I mean, that's a horrible thing. But unfortunately, what happens is that that plays out from a class perspective in the media to the lowest class, which just so happens to be the people who basically, they say, just got the right to vote in the 60s. Not that that's done anything for anyone, but voting's actually negative for everyone. But you see what I'm saying? They in the 60s, they were saying a black man only counted two-thirds of vote. Like, he wasn't even a full vote. I mean, so black people are the victims of this class system because of the conditions that they were in, and they basically built the corporations that are over them today. Their hands and their blood actually built all these corporations that are basically set up the class system over them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
On my own. I was going to say that Rochelle was touching on something that Chris and I were talking about earlier today. And that is, are you guys familiar with other directed as a term for a personality type?
Mm-mm.
Well, she was just talking about how black people have, or black males have a particular type set out to emulate, right?
Yeah.
And that's been going on. I mean, I'm 37. I'm 37 years old, and I remember when that first came out. Like,
okay.
I remember when that whole, like, black people didn't used to dress like that. You know?
No, not even speak like this at all. My grandmother and father are completely different than, they're not your typical black person, and your stereotypical black person that is portrayed on TV, and neither am I. You know, and people were like shocked, like, oh my God, like. So you speak so well for a black person. It's like, what does that even mean? Like, you know. go ahead, though.
No, I was just saying that I remember what black people used to dress like and how they used to be because I've grown up in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And so what Chris and I were talking about today is how just culture as a whole, people have been molded and shaped into what's called an other-directed. Type of person, and that is where you are a person who your tastes and your interests are directed by others. It's not something where you're kind of like looking to yourself as where you I'm gonna go find out for myself what this is. It's like you're looking to your peers, you're looking to the people on television.
Yeah.
The people that you idolize, that's where you're going to get the way you dress from. That's where you're going to get light from. And
yeah.
So that was actually identified all the way back in 1950 by a lot of these guys who were trying to shift the culture were like Frankfurt Marxist types. And one of these guys, his name was David Reisman. He wrote a book called The Lonely Crowd. And what he found out in his studies, I'm not saying the entire thing was totally perfect, and I don't agree with it because obviously it's coming from a Frankfurt School Marxist-type philosophy, but he wasn't incorrect about certain things, and that is that they wanted an other-directed type of person to be the dominant person in the culture. And you could say that, like, overall, in that field of study, coming from the Marxists, they would come from the idea that the reason that this was being promoted was because the corporations wanted to sell people things and created a mass consumer society. That's one reason. But see, it's more interesting to think along the lines of the power elite. Wanting an other-directed person because they would be a more emotional person. And when you've got people who live off of their emotions instead of reason or logic, you are going to be able to pull a lot of psychological warfare tactics on them and be able to get them to react emotionally and become emotionally codependent, which leads to the breakup of a family. Chris and I were discussing this today, how people will tend to bog other people down who are self-confident with a lot of their problems because they've been brought up in a culture for the past 50, 60 years that has basically, in all forms of media, implemented psychiatry into it. Like where you're supposed to be telling everybody all your problems and it's everything's supposed to be emotional. Men are supposed to be these emotional basket cases. And men are not designed to do that. Men need to have a stiff upper lip and, you know, grow hair.
Oh, yeah, they want to feminize men for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the ways they do this is...
They say a lot about stuff like that. Go ahead, sir.
I was just saying, one of the ways they've done this is they've made everybody prone to, like, if you work with somebody or say there's people in your family who have problems, you know, obviously you care for people in your family, but see, you cannot carry the weight of everybody's problems if you are a self-confident, what's called an inner-directed person. And those tend to be what you would call the backbone of the family, or like, you know, some people at work recognize this quality in you, so they come to you and they ask you for advice. Well, people today, they don't want advice. What they want is confirmation that they are doing what, you know, like what they're doing in their life is okay, but they don't want to change anything. But they definitely want to be able to schizophrenically tell you all their problems, but not do anything about it, because that would mean that they would have to actually change something in their life. You see what I'm saying? And so people are an emotional roller coaster all over the place, men included, and it's primarily probably targeted at men, but through the women too, because women are already kind of prone to be more emotional and less reasonable to a certain extent. And I'm speaking generally, I'm not speaking absolutely. And so people who don't have their logic reason in order, they're going to be a lot more pliable. And this is how you take people off to war, because you tell them, hey, we got to help those people over there. And you play on people's emotions and say, yeah, we really do need to help those people over there.
Yeah, I was thinking about, I guess, kind of switching topics here maybe, but not really, about the controlling of emotions and how important that is. And, like, how important it is to have control over your emotions. Like, and that's almost impossible, you know, to control your emotions, like, consciously 100% of the time. Because I was trying to figure out, like, well, how do they control our emotions, like, via television and other things and music and whatnot. And I was saying that maybe the first way, like they were saying, the easiest way to get a concept through to someone is through comedy, you know. And so a way to control somebody's emotions to gain, like, you know, the initial control over someone's emotions, you start with laughter, I guess. And so I was thinking about, like, canned laughter coming out in sitcoms and everything.
That's how they introduced all the gay stuff, was through comedy.
Right, right. You know, and so, but they, you know, again, they're controlling, you know, your emotions basically in the form of laughter, so they can make you laugh at any moment, and then it moves on to, you know, the slow music and stuff, and they can make you cry at any moment, you know, and so then there's all those in between emotions that they must have, just, you know what I mean, really down to a science as to how they can just really make you feel, like, you know, angry or whatever you want. Because, you know, when I was watching these, I used to watch these ghost stories or whatever. Like, I thought that Unsolved Mysteries and stuff. I don't know if you guys remember that thing. But every time I would watch that show, I would get, like, this tingly feeling. And, like, my eyes would water. Like, I'm not even kidding. And, like, it wasn't even particularly anything that, like, I was sad about or anything. But for some reason, I would get this feeling in my stomach. And, like, my eyes would start watering. And, like, I start to think about that, and I'm like, oh, it's probably, they probably have some kind of, you know, they know some kind of tone to play or some kind of something to do to where they can make you have those kind of emotions, you know, they can make you feel those kind of feelings. And that just gives validity to whatever they're saying, I guess, you know. So I guess to have full control of your emotions so that you're not being downloaded with certain things. They say that you have when you feel, I don't know. I'm confused now about what I was going to say.
Chris and I had talked about this before, that that when they really brought in pop music, music has always, you know, there's two sides to our culture that we live in. You could say that, like, that there's many, many things in this culture that are true art. It truly is art. Like, you can't deny it. And no matter what, you know, how people use the system, you have to live in it, and you have to like stuff. And so I was thinking about a piece of music by George Frederick Handel. He's the one, he's most famous for, you know, the Messiah, Hallelujah. But he has a piece of music, it's called Water Music. And it's a really beautiful piece of classical music. If anybody is interested in some good classical music, check out Handel's Water Music. And I was thinking about how, you know, even in this culture, we can get beautiful things, right? The only problem is you can get really beautiful things, and then you can be manipulated through the emotions that those things evoke. Okay? And so music and like you were describing, when you're watching emotions being played out on television, or if you're you have to be aware of the things in there that are the messages that are being sent while the emotion is being brought to a heightened point.
Oh my God! So, yeah, that's what I was trying to say. That's the point that I was going to make about how when they can